Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Folgers in your cup, or whatever your favorite morning beverage is. And yours truly, Adam Lepp, in your ears. We call this show a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Dr. Ronald Feynman, good friend of mine and regular commentator here at the station, will be joining me shortly to discuss national and world events. A lot going on in the great world that we live in. It is election day. Be sure to vote for your favorite candidates. Here in Marion, we have the city council race up for grabs. Many candidates. So please do exercise your right as an American to decide which people will be leading the government of the great city of Marion. Of course, we do broadcast all over the world. So if you're not in Marion, please do vote for the candidates of your choice in the domicile in which you hang your hat. Important right we have, again, as Americans, and I strongly urge you to exercise that right. Nice, crisp, cool mid-fall day here in mid-Ohio. We appreciate your listening. We have great programming all day for you. This evening, Linda Sims, Terry Tackett, Scott Spears, and other members of the WWGH staff will be providing live election coverage. So keep your radio or virtual listening device right where it is, WWGH 107.1 FM, and broadcasting online all over the great planet Earth at WWGH1071.com. And we're joined once again by our regular political correspondent and expert in contemporary American history from Boca Raton, Florida, Dr. Ronald Feynman. How are you today, Ron?
I'm doing fine. You know, I appreciate you inviting me again, Adam. I've always enjoyed being on the show.
Is this number, 24, 25? What number are we up to? I know you keep track of the appearances that you've had here on the Talking Place, WWGH.
My son has said I should stop talking about that, but actually this will be number 25 and 18th time with you, but I'm not going to bring it up anymore unless you ask me like you just did.
A quarter of 100 appearances. Well, that sounds pretty good.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Ron, there recently was another tragic event, event in Texas, and I know we've talked about it. It seems like too many times, and I don't know what the resolution is, but how can we resolve all the problems with the violence that the country, I think, is currently suffering?
Well, we need a lot more spent on mental health care, and there's obviously we're not doing it. And in fact, the Republican Party majority in Congress is trying to cut that in the budget because they're so interested in giving a big tax cut to the 1%. It just drives me crazy they're doing that. Plus, also, we need sensible gun control laws like we had in the past. Not saying take away people's right to have weapons, but certainly anybody who's mentally unstable should not be allowed to have weapons. And there should be limits on what you can buy online or gun shows.
As we've talked about, we're not advocating making guns illegal. Certainly hunting, for example, is an important American pastime.
Of course.
And responsible gun ownership is one thing, but we think the laws are, put it mildly, a bit loose. And we need not only to have background checks, but possibly mental health evaluations, better auditing of who's buying guns. I mean, the pharmacy has names of people that are buying pseudoephedrine. And I understand that that can be used to make things that aren't desirable products. But it seems like that auditing and that track, that record keeping is stricter than it is for guns. And a gun with one push of a trigger can kill one person or multiple people, especially an automatic weapon. And we obviously need consistency. And I don't have all the answers, but I think it's pretty obvious at this point. And we hate to bring up tragic stories, but it seems like there are news items that need to be discussed, and hopefully we can get to a resolution at some time.
Well, about 90% of the American people in polls want some kind of gun regulation. Was reasonable.
Is the NRA too much of a lobbying force? Are they just too powerful, as well as other groups that? I'm sure the NRA certainly is in favor of responsible gun ownership, but maybe we kind of wonder, is their lobbying strong where it's influencing legislators and laws about responsible gun ownership just can't become a reality? Is there a
Right. 2 years ago, the need for some gun regulation. Now they are just in it, I think, because they make profit from it all. I think they're a despicable organization at this time because they don't see the importance of doing something about this crisis. And I wanted to mention that there were people in Congress who were speaking up on this issue regularly, and one of them, I think, is going to be running for president. He hasn't, of course, announced, but Chris Murphy, Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, is a real hero and champion after what happened, of course, at Sandy Hook 5 years ago, and he's become a real promoter of the need for gun regulation. Of course, he's not getting anywhere, but it could be an issue that could help him possibly, become a serious candidate in 2020 for the Democratic Party.
So it's obviously a difficult issue, and hopefully things can iron themselves out. But we do feel for any victims of families and friends of victims of these tragedies, and let's hope that we can spend less time talking about these issues in the future. You are listening.
One thing I pointed out today on Facebook is thoughts and prayers is so hollow. And constantly hear thoughts and prayers. We need to do more than that. And seeing the president from Japan say thoughts and prayers, I thought, you need to do more.
You are listening to.
It's the gun law, but he's not willing to do it.
You are listening to the finest in mid-morning coffee breaks with Adam and the professor, Dr. Ron Fineman. From Boca Raton, Florida, our regular political commentator on his 25th appearance here at The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here, your host. Hopefully you're enjoying today's program. Of course, you can always email me with any questions or comments, suggestions, complaints about what we discuss on this show, Adam at WWGH1071.com. Dr. Fineman is the author of the blog that he writes for pretty much every day. It's called theprogressiveprofessor.com. And some interesting blog entries since we had him on about a week ago. One article that he recently wrote was the significance of the year 2017. We recently reached the one-year anniversary of the election of Donald Trump, and what some consider to be the biggest upset in the history of presidential elections. And not been a year since he's been president. Of course, that occurred on noon on January 20th of this year. But how do you think, Ron, how do you think 2017 will stack up against other years that had a lot of significance, especially, let's say, in the last decade?
Well, I think 2017 has been the most significant year in America since 2001. My article on Progressive Professor, November 3rd, said 2001, of course, was the year of the September 11th attacks and the recognition we were not safe for worldwide terrorism, the inauguration and crisis leadership short-term of George W. Bush. I think it certainly was a big turning point. We look at the world very differently now. But then we go back. The wall, the collapse of the Soviet Empire in Eastern Europe, the Tiananmen Square massacre in China, and the inauguration of George H.W. Bush. And I think 89 really was a turning point. And 68, of course, many people have said 1968, the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, the Tet Offensive in the Vietnam War, which caused the withdrawal of Lyndon Johnson from the presidential race, and the disarray and tumult in America over the civil rights. Nixon, and then 1945, of course, World War II's end, the atomic bombing of Japan, the death of Franklin D. Roosevelt, the evolution of the Cold War between the Soviet Union, definitely a turning point year. So I would think, if I was writing a book on the subject, I would say the five most significant years in the last, I guess, 70 years would be 1945, 1968, 1989, 2001, and now 2017 with the election and the tumult under that's going on under Donald Trump.
Speaking of presidential election upsets or surprise outcomes, of course, we had the Truman and Dewey election where the newspapers right, the newspaper said that Dewey had won, but he didn't. Was that a bigger upset or surprise than the Clinton-Trump election? Or how do those two kind of stack up against each other?
Well, I think 1948 was a shocking event until 2016, because both times the polls were wrong, and this time the polls were much more sophisticated than they were in 1948 when polling was a new business. And I think it's going to really create a crisis in the polling industry that... But now with Russian collusion, which seems very clear, and with all the interaction of the social media, I think we have a real crisis that we have no confidence that we will ever really know who's leading or who's doing well and who will win and what it all means. And that's, I think, much worse than 1948.
Do we need to change the way that we do the polls or disseminate the information, especially in the age of social media?
Well, social media really transforms everything, and that's the problem. And that's why, they've been questioned before Congress, and the leaders have not shown up, just people further down the chain. And I think that social media needs to have some kind of government regulation to watch over what's going on. They're too concerned about making profit, which I understand, but it should be more than that. They have a responsibility to the American people besides making profit, and I am worried about how Facebook and Twitter and Google are dealing with this, and they've been denying involvement by Russian advertisers and others. And now they're starting to admit it. And it really has to be figured out soon so we don't end up. But now more than ever, it looks to many like it's very possible Donald Trump did not really win the election, that some votes were switched in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and maybe even Ohio, and that it might have changed the result. And that is shocking and alarming and unacceptable. Certainly not to have it happen again.
Will we ever know what the real outcome of the election is and about this supposed hacking? Is that ever going to be solved? It seems like it's going back and forth, and we've seen articles saying Hillary Clinton might contest the election. Is there ever going to be a resolution? It seems like with the Bush election, with the hanging chads, and again in Florida where you live, was that ever really resolved? And it seems like it's an item for history books that's not going to go away anytime soon.
No matter what happens, we're not going to have a reverse where Hillary Clinton is going to be inaugurated. That's not going to happen. However, I do really still believe that Donald Trump will not be in office long. And if Mike Pence is going to also be involved in some collusion, as some people think, he might be in office a short time. And the most crucial person to think about will be that, indeed, if Pence becomes president under the 25th Amendment, he can appoint a replacement that will end up finishing the term if Mike Pence is found to be colluding. And obviously who that person is going to be very important. On the last show with Mike Esser, we talked about possible people who might be picked, and I think that's something to really think about. And again, I would say either John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, or Nikki Haley, president of the U.N. ambassador, in my mind, might be the best possible choices, and I think they're both clean. And I think Nikki Haley's really outstanding in many ways and has done a very good job. And that these people might be the way to take us through the remains of this term if indeed Mike Pence is shown to have problems as well, which I think may very well be true.
You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, Dr. Ronald Fineman, on the line with me, frequent guest and good friend of myself and of the radio station, discussing current events, President Trump, and other things that we feel are important in our society. And again, the social media that seems to dominate almost every story that comes to our desks and our computers. Ron, you recently wrote that Donald Trump clearly wants a white Anglo-Christian-dominated America like the one that you grew up with in the 50s and 60s, but that's a lost cause due to the immigration laws passed under President Lyndon Johnson 50 years ago and the high birth rate among African Americans, Latino Americans, and Asian Americans. Is it something that we should be upset about? And you're saying, are we concerned that it will change America? And you're saying diversity through marriage and immigration enriches America, and you feel there's been concern for the future. Donald Trump, again, looking to not have the diversity, ethnic diversity, diversity with respect to the men and women that other presidents have had, and that is the right thing to do. How is that affecting how not only the train of thought is with his cabinet members, but the decisions that are made in interaction with Congress? How big of a problem is this, and how will it possibly scar future presidents and their efforts to have a diverse cabinet and diverse methods of thinking?
The party itself is seeming more and more to be a party of the white working class that has been terrified by the fact of other groups growing in numbers. But, you know, just now, Chris Matthews of MSNBC and NBC came out with his new book on Robert Kennedy and points out Robert Kennedy, who, of course, was killed in 1968, was the un-Trump. That's what he called him. It's a very interesting concept. I'm going to be writing about that soon. The un-Trump, a person who brought people of different races and people of similar economic classes together. He could unite white working class people with minorities, and they could all get along, and he promoted optimism and a future rather than Trump, who's trying to promote the past. Because unfortunately, or fortunately, I say, to me it doesn't matter, the fact is the white majority is going to become the minority in the next 30 years. Nothing can be done about it because of reproduction being down for whites and because of immigration and high birth rate. But I do not think that diversity is bad, and I think we are a nation of all nations, of all religions, of all racial and cultural groups. I think it strengthens us. It makes us the greatest nation, and I am concerned about the alarm expressed by people.
So you feel then that President Trump...
It's not going to be good for the future if indeed white working class people think this is the answer to promote violence or to cause grief for people of other backgrounds. We have to tolerate and accept them.
So you feel that Donald Trump is not embracing diversity, and we're almost going backwards, and that affects how the administration tackles its day to day activities and how legislation is passed, because it should reflect diversity
exactly
of the country.
Of Robert Kennedy. We really need a Robert Kennedy type today. We really do. Someone who can unite people of different backgrounds and of similar economic classes. But also, he could attract wealthy people. He could.
It brings the case.
It's really a tragedy that he was killed. And he is one of my 15 might have been presidents that I write about in my book, Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. Because I think had he not been killed, he would have been the nominee in 1968 of the Democratic Party and would have pulled out a win over Richard Nixon, and we would never have had Watergate.
Interestingly, we bring up Nikki Haley, and she's a female, obviously, and relatively young, about 45. She's also of Indian.
She's also actually not herself, but apparently immigrants from India.
Right. She's
so
Indian.
She's
and
also diversity in that respect, yes.
Right. She was of the Sikh religion and then converted to Methodist when she married her husband. And she certainly stands out as not a typical member of the Trump cabinet. I mean, she's very smart and certainly one of the rising young stars. I guess I had a lack of better way to ask, Ron. How did she slip through? And how is she? I mean, how did Trump pick her, being so diverse and different from other cabinet members that he has chosen?
Well, I tell you, she did not support him in the South Carolina primary. He was pretty nasty, Trump, toward her. And he's made some. She tolerates a lot of him, like a lot of the cabinet members, but she's also proved that she's a fast learner, that she's a very intelligent woman. She showed courage when she stood up at the time of the Charleston church shooting, which is important considering what happened on Sunday, the fact of taking down the Confederate flag and all that. She really showed leadership in 2015, and that impressed me a great amount, and I think she has become a fast learner on foreign, which many people seem to think even Trump's bringing it up again, he doesn't know that she might be the next Secretary of State. And once she's in that position for a while, she'd be certainly very qualified to become president if she had to be, or vice president. And I do think she should be on a short list of Mike Pence might pick as his vice president if he becomes president, which I think is likely. But I don't think Mike Pence is going to necessarily finish out the term either. So that's why who the vice president is, it's going to be extremely important. And John Kasich is a good alternative as well.
If we were to list maybe the two most rising young stars in the Republican Party, you and I probably would agree that Ben Sasse and Nikki Haley would probably be on that short list.
Actually, I think Ben Sasse last week when we had my guest is 45. He's a former college president. I find him, I don't necessarily agree with him, but he's very principled. He's been against Trump from the beginning, even before the election. He has a PhD in American history like I do, which fascinates me that he does. And he's just a man that seems decent and principled. Even if I don't agree with him, I can respect his views because he comes across well. So I think Ben Sasse and Nikki Haley doesn't have many of them, I don't think.
So although we may not agree with their views, and no one person is going to agree with everything a candidate feels, certainly they're smart and ethical and have a lot of experience, and they're both in their 40s, they're relatively young, so they certainly would be the rising stars. And it's possible.
Today, I mentioned about the Democratic Party, they need to find people that are younger. We have to get past the 70-year-old people and all of that. We need to get people in their 40s, 50s, and early 60s for the future, but so does the Republican Party. But we got to find people who have principle and are not just going to cater to the corporations, as Paul Ryan, for instance, does, the Speaker of the House. He really upsets me a great deal with his phony appeals that he's really going to try to help the middle class.
Now, Marco Rubio is also
50,000 income.
Right,
that's middle class.
Right, Marco Rubio also
$50,000 a year.
Right, Marco Rubio also being in his 40s, but we're saying he isn't really in that class. Again, he does have experience. He has some popularity, but we feel that Nikki Haley and Ben Sasse probably fit that mold better.
Well, honestly, I'm not a big fan of Marco Rubio. I think he's all that intelligent, bright. Honestly, he really messed up in the debates. Mind, but I think Ben Sasse definitely does, and Nikki Haley does, so I think they're doing a different classification, although they're the same age group, that's true. So is Ted Cruz the same age group, but oh my God, I think Ted Cruz is horrific, he's horrible. I think right now I rate him the worst member of the Senate, nobody likes him, but of course if Roy Moore gets in, I think he'll be more liked than Roy Moore if he wins the Alabama Senate seat in December. Hopefully he will not win it. And Doug Jones will get that seat, Democrat.
With the Democrats, it seems like some of the most recognizable Democrats, they're in their 70s, or they're definitely getting a bit on the older side, and we need some younger leadership. Do you have any people in mind, Ron, who you think would be?
Senator Murphy, we have Senator Kamala Harris of California. We have Mayor Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles, and I think he's a big city mayor, biggest city except for New York, someone to be considered. We also have, of course, we have Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand of New York, and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, Senator Klobuchar, and Cory Booker of New Jersey. We have some really good young people in their 40s and 50s that
should be considered
to run for president in 2020.
Right, we do need to have good rising stars. I mean, a Democratic counterpart to Ben Sasse or Nikki Haley, and someone like Joe Biden might be a good candidate, but he's well in his 70s, and we're wondering if he really would.
Well, I love Joe Biden, but if he was nominated, I would certainly back him. But he's 70; he'll be 78 in 2020, a year younger than Bernie Sanders, and I just think it's too late. But I wish he had run in 2016. I would like to believe he might have been able to win the nomination if he had run. But his son, of course, died, and he chose not to get involved. And we can understand that. But that was really a turning point because a lot of people now say they think if he had put the nominee against Trump, that he would have beaten him. And I think it's very likely.
Yeah, I think with the outcome of this election,
Midwest,
there will be conjecture of. As long as you and I can probably see in the future in terms of what would have happened, and people that are saying,
it's always just like when Robert Kennedy, if he had lived, been the nominee instead of Hubert Humphrey in 1968, would he have beaten Nixon? I would think so, but we can never be sure of what didn't happen. It's still fiction,
Right, and it's people who are saying that Bernie Sanders would have beaten Donald Trump, and you and I tend to disagree. I don't think Sanders would have beaten Trump at all. I think it would have been...
Actually, I don't disagree with that. I don't think he would have beaten him. I don't think he would have, because there are a couple of issues with him. I don't think it's a big problem that he's a, quote, socialist. He's not a dangerous socialist like you might say in a Soviet Union or China or Cuba, and they use the word socialism. He's more like Canadian or more like Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland kind of socialist. But the word socialist, to many people, is communist. I have people always saying this to me, and they show their ignorance. And also, he looks very old, and Joe Biden doesn't look anywhere near as old, and he's only 1 year younger as Bernie. The old look, I don't think, works too well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's that grandfatherly image that he had.
There would have been some anti-Semitism, and those kind of things, I think, would have prevented him from winning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's that grandfatherly image that he had with the younger people, but they seem to be attracted to him. And it was so different. When I was in college, younger people were conservative and liked Reagan. And then the tide kind of switched. And then it seemed like...
Yeah, it has switched. And that's why we have to appeal to the people. But I think the answer is not Bernie Sanders. Bernie is mid-40s by 2020. Eric Garcetti, late 40s. Kamala Harris, early 50s, et cetera. That's the kind of... Because, look at it this way. For the Democrats, at least, they've had four times they've picked someone from the younger generation, and they really inspired people. John F. Kennedy at age 43 in 1960. Jimmy Carter at age 52 in 1976. Bill Clinton at age 46 in 1992. And Barack Obama at 47 in 2008. So I think we need someone of that kind of generation, 40s and 50s again, to follow the lead of those four presidents who inspired us.
You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, professor being Dr. Ronald Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida. Still teaches part-time in the area. He's written a couple books that have gotten quite a bit of press and very good reviews. And we speak to him regularly here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Ron, you wrote recently in your blog that Donald Trump is emerging more and more as a fascist who needs to stop in his quest for absolute power before it's too late, and the Republican Party in Congress will be condemned in history if they do not step in and stop him right away. We're not a dictatorship. Does Donald Trump think that he's king, Ron? Has he not properly gauged what the president can do and what the president can't do? What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think his language is very incendiary. He intervenes to say that the terrorists have killed 8 people and wounded 12 in Lower Manhattan should get the death penalty. That's not his place to do that. He intervenes to say the Justice Department, the FBI, should follow his desires to go after Hillary Clinton and the Democrats and lock her up. That's not something except in a dictatorship that should do. He intervenes about Bo Bergdahl. For what he did in going to the Taliban back in 2009 in Afghanistan. He wants the Justice Department to listen to him and the FBI. They're not supposed to. They're supposed to do what's constitutional. He attacks the news media for reporting facts, and the judiciary for going against him on his travel ban. And these are all signs of fascism, and it's very dangerous. So we are not a dictatorship. He would love to be a king or emperor. He loves king, of course, and it looks like a couple of days ago he did something that might have affected Saudi politics and got somebody pushed out of influence there by the royal family. And I just think that he lives in a delusional world where he really would like to get rid of the Bill of Rights and Civil Liberties if he could, and stop the Mueller investigation, and we can't allow that to happen.
Now, the Mueller investigation, again, seems like we hear more about that every day. And bottom line is, right,
yes,
right, something is going to happen. Now, are Jared and Donald Jr., are they really at risk for going behind bars? And what's the risk that Donald Trump could go from the Oval Office to a prison himself? Is that, I mean, people joke about it. I mean, there's certainly talk.
Is that ends up in prison? That I don't know. But I think they're going to face indictments and trials. And I actually think that that's going to cause Donald Trump to resign once his family members are threatened. But I don't know if I actually believe that they will end up in prison. Although I think they'll find a way to get around it, and possibly Mike Pence might pardon people, which was damaged him like a damaged him before in pardoning Nixon. going on, and a lot of people are now facing indictments, and, you know, a couple already have, and I do think that this is a scandal that's not going to go away, and for people saying there's nothing there, sorry, there is something there, and it's just denial of people that don't want to see reality. And all I know is if this was any other person, they, you know, I'm certain that many Republicans would say, you know, go after them. But because it's him, Donald Trump, many of them are just sitting on the sidelines and not considering what is necessary for the country, not just for the party. And I think that will really harm them in the future politically.
Now, we talk about our governor, John Kasich, Ron. We feel he might be a good president or vice president or high ranking.
Absolutely. Yes,
cabinet
I don't agree
member.
With him on everything, but he's certainly reasonable and decent.
And I just bring that he didn't attend the Republican convention in Cleveland, 2 hours from his house, and you know, not far from capital city of Columbus, where he works, of course, at the State House. And certainly he and Donald Trump don't see eye to eye really on too much at all. What do you think is going through John Kasich's mind right now, Ron, the Mueller investigation and the fact that Donald Trump thinks that he's king, not president, and there are differences. Do you think that John Kasich feels that?
Things, and I don't think he's saying it. I think he believes it. He thinks that, you know, that this investigation needs to go forward, and I think he is planning, you know, though he's not going to say this early, that he might very well, if Trump is still in office, or even Mike Pence, that he might challenge them for 2020, because I think it's not just a question of who's in office, it's the direction of the Republican Party for the future. I think he wants to resurrect the mainstream conservatism of the Republican Party, and I think he's one of the few people could actually do that, and I think that's a commitment to do that once he is out as governor in 2018, about the freedom to do that. So I'm certain he will be running for president, as well as Ben Sasse. I think those two are definite challenges to either Trump or Pence. But
do you feel that John Kasich is of the belief that the Republican Party can recover and go back to the way it was under, let's say, either President Bush, or has Donald Trump permanently scarred it? Can we ever recover from this?
Well, I think if we can go the direction of a Kasich or a Sasse, I think we can move the party back to centrist right rather than right, you know, capital R. I'm not saying I would support my competence and principled, and I could disagree with things, but I would think of them as not being reckless and dangerous, because I really think Donald Trump is dangerous, and Mike Pence, I think, with his overly religious viewpoint, is very dangerous in a different way. So I am not thrilled at the thought of him becoming president either. I'm also not thrilled at Paul Ryan, who I think is totally unprincipled. So I really hope that if there is a vice presidential appointment, that we get someone like a Ben Sasse or a Nikki Haley, because that would be far better for the party's future, as I see it.
Ron, you probably saw a poll regarding how many people approve of, as I call him, President Donald. A Washington Post ABC News poll, 59% disapprove of Donald Trump's handling of the presidency, the worst of any president at 9 months in office since modern polling began. And of those who disapprove, 50% said they do so strongly. 37% of those polled approve of Donald Trump's performance in office. Trump is the first president since Harry Truman to see a net negative approval at this point in his term. Bill Clinton had the next worst with a net positive of 11 points. One that I think is important, is your president honest and trustworthy? Well, 65% don't think that Donald Trump is honest and trustworthy. It was 58% in April. And two-thirds say they don't think that Donald Trump has the kind of personality and temperament it takes to serve effectively as president.
Now, I agree completely with all that.
Melania are on a trip to Asia with, I'm sure, people in Asia. They read the news, and certainly they're following the trip and following the approval rating. How is that going to affect his interaction with the people in Asia? Are they going to take the guy seriously? Are they going to feel, well, this is a U.S. president, but He's not someone who's well liked.
He is the commander in chief. He does have control of nuclear weapons and the military. But I think that although they're not going to say so, I think they're alarmed, as are the European allies, that this man is unhinged and that he's dangerous, and that his own staff, including John Kelly, the White House chief of staff, has really lost credibility with the way he handled the whole issue of Congressman Frederica Wilson, and I do think that the people around him, most of them around Trump, are losing credibility. Not Nikki Haley, and I hope she doesn't, but a lot of the top people, some of the generals, I'm starting to wonder, are they really there to keep him under control, or is he uncontrollable? So I think in Asia, they have to deal with him, but I think it's more a marriage of convenience, almost like a shotgun marriage, because of the North Korean threat. But I don't think that they're in love with him in any way. He's not popular like John F. Kennedy was, or like Barack Obama was in many overseas nations.
Really disturbing thing about this poll, Ron, is only 32% of people polled feel that he is trustworthy with respect to handling the issue in North Korea. 51% have no trust in him at all on North Korea, and 16% say they trust him just somewhat. So 51% have no trust in him at all, and the North Korea issue is one of the biggest issues facing the world right now. And that's very troublesome, especially as he visits Asia.
Yes, it is very troublesome. And I am concerned we're going to see a nuclear war, and I just don't want to see that. He's going to cause more mass history as it is with the way he's, the way he's not reacted to these gun deaths and this poor reaction in Puerto Rico and even in Texas and Florida compared to what it should have been, and also the fires in California and all of the mistaken bombings overseas that have killed civilians. He's responsible for a lot of dead people in just 9 months, and it's just the beginning, I think, of what's going to be a horrible situation if we get involved in a major war, whether nuclear or just a land war or both.
49% of people polled feel Donald Trump committed a crime in connection with possible Russian attempts to influence the election. Only 19%, though, feel there is solid evidence. If they were to poll you, Ron, what would you say about Trump and the Russian attempts to influence the election?
I absolutely think that Donald Trump colluded and that he's lying. And he's known, the New York Times and Washington Post make it clear, he lies more than anyone has ever lied. Every politician lies, but he lies on the average of 5 times a day. There's a long list of both the New York Times and Washington Post of all the lies he's had since he started his campaign in 2015 through his presidency. And the man simply does not know how to tell the truth on anything.
And that's obviously a problem. We know that everybody lies. We've talked about that. And presidents, again, being humans, they lie, but perhaps the lies told by the current president have gotten just a bit out of hand.
Well, there is a saying, although it's not true, that George Washington can never tell a lie and Donald Trump can never tell the truth.
We're talking to Dr. Ronald Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida, good friend of mine and of the radio station, a frequent guest here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. Airing every Tuesday between approximately 10 a.m. and 11 here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And it's now Eastern Standard Time, so just ET instead of EDT. So anything else going on that you wanted to talk to our listeners about today, Ron?
I don't know. I think it would give me a chance to think. I think maybe the issue of the Iran nuclear deal, the idea that if we abandon the Iran nuclear deal I wrote about on November 1st, that we could end up ensuring that North Korea will never agree to an agreement, because that was an agreement we made, and it seems to be working. Every indication is Russia and China believe so. And if we just cut out of the deal, why would North Korea believe they could ever make a deal with the United States if we don't keep a deal with Iran? So to me, it's not the time to be bringing up Iran. It makes it harder to come to an agreement of any kind with North Korea.
Certainly it's a difficult situation. And is this maybe not a good time for Donald Trump to be making an Asia trip, that there are just too many things he needs to handle in the Oval Office?
Well, I think it is. And also, you know, he doesn't have the greatest energy level. You're going to see he's probably going to self-destruct with some comments on this trip as he goes on. And he's not going to get as much sleep, and he's not going to have things as comfortable as he's accustomed to. I mean, he doesn't have the kind of energy level that he needs. He kept on saying Hillary Clinton didn't. But Hillary Clinton traveled a million miles as Secretary of State. Trump has never traveled that much. And also, she gave that testimony before that committee for 11 hours. It was magnificent and nonstop and really knew what she was talking about. Very bright and intellectual. He is not that capability. So he claims that he's stronger and more resilient than her, but he is not. That's just his delusion that he thinks he is. So I am concerned that he's going to make some news that's not very pleasant with his rhetoric and his language on his trip in the next 10 days.
We've talked about how President Carter offered to help Donald Trump with some issues. Any updates?
Well, he offered to go to North Korea, right. And so far he hasn't answered. He didn't say no, but he hasn't answered. I think it would be a smart idea to have Carter go. No guarantee of success, but there is the saying, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And I think that's absolutely the case. And I think it'd be worthwhile. Forget about politics and forget about what you thought about Carter. Let him go. He's a statesman. Maybe he could come up. Maybe he can't. But let him try. Better than just going to war and having tens of thousands of casualties, probably hundreds of thousands, maybe even a million or more in South Korea and Japan, along with, of course, North Korea.
Is Donald Trump maybe too proud to ask for help or accept help? He kind of wants to do things on his own despite his...
Well, because he knows everything. He's best brain, and he says he has the best memory, but he can't remember these meetings with George Papadopoulos and these other lower-level people, but he was in those meetings. We have photographs. You know, he claims that he's brilliant. He doesn't need anybody else, he said, when he started this trip. He doesn't need an ambassador to South Korea. Doesn't need anybody, because all that matters is him. Well, we're going to see whether he screws up in the next 10 days when he's also going to meet Putin. What is he going to deal with Putin? How's he going to deal with him? Are we going to know, or is it going to be years later we're going to realize the damage he might have done with Putin privately? It's concerning. It's very worrisome, and most diplomats are very worried, and most conservative intellectuals, particularly for the Weekly Standard and the National Review, most of them, and people like that, do not feel comfortable with Trump in the White House. They feel he's a danger in foreign affairs as well as domestic.
So, a unique president, to put it mildly, and we like the idea of a president taking a trip, but is this maybe not a good time, and how qualified is Donald Trump as an ambassador of the United States to visit foreign countries? I guess we'll kind of find out. Maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised. Who knows?
Well, it would be nice if he did. That would be a good move, I think. But I have a feeling he's not going to take the offer up of Jimmy Carter. I don't think so. But it'd be nice. It'd be nice for him to surprise us, in my mind, in a positive way instead of a negative way. Because so far, everything in my mind has been negative. There's been nothing positive about his approach, his rhetoric, his behavior, his actions.
We are speaking with
in a good way.
Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from Boca Raton, Florida, our resident political expert and presidential historian. About ready to wrap up here. A couple minutes left. Before we say goodbye, time always flies here on this show. Tell our listeners, tell our listeners again about your book on presidential assassinations and where they can purchase it.
Okay, the book is from Roman Littlefield. It can be bought from either from the publisher Roman Littlefield in Atlanta, Maryland, or from Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million. And the title is Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency from Andrew Jackson and Barack Obama. And it comes up from 2014 on Obama and covers all the way from Jackson on and includes presidential candidates, Robert Kennedy, George Wallace, and Huey Long, along with presidents. And also talks about 15 might have been presidents if history had been different. And one of them, as we said earlier, was Robert Kennedy, who I think if he had not been assassinated in 1968, would have won the Democratic nomination and would have defeated Richard Nixon, and we would never have had Watergate as a result. And I think Nixon, as now said by Chris Matthews of NBC and MSNBC, is the un-Trump. He's the exact opposite of Trump and the kind of person we need to unify white working class people with people of other racial and religious backgrounds, which is what he, RFK, was able to do half a century ago. A unique personality in that regard. So he's correct on that, Chris Matthews.
Right. So with, let's say, unique or unusual president currently occupying the Oval Office, this is a good time of any to study presidential history and your book about presidential assassinations. It definitely does tingle a few brain cells and lets us think what might have happened. And I think suddenly, if there's any good coming out of current events, people are spending more time studying about the great country we live in and how this presidency compares to some others. And
yes,
just,
the news media is really active and has done a great job, as they did in the Watergate scandal, especially the New York Times and Washington Post above all, but others as other papers and periodicals as well. And thank God for the free media, and any idea to crack down on it would be a horrendous thought. It'd be a dictatorship in the making.
Right. I mean, so I guess to close things out, Ron, ironically, Trump may talk about the fake news media, but it's this very same news media, the media that I and Scott and all my colleagues here at the station are involved in. We're the ones covering everything and allowing people to decide for themselves what they think, getting the polls out, getting the information out, reporting on events, and just letting the chips fall as they may.
And so far, the evidence is building up. It's not fake. It's real.
Well, this show definitely is, Ron, and it's always good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you again for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked the cake.
Adam Lapp.
Yes, that's my name, and hosting two talk shows every Tuesday morning on WWGH. That's my game. Thank you for listening. I have good news and bad news. Bad news is that my appearances at the station today with respect to hosting talk shows have come to an end. Good news is that after the 11 o'clock features, Linda Sims is up. I am Adam at WWGH1071.com.